it's time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Good to have you with us this Tuesday, November 14th, 2023. Kurt Ehlen of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com drops by the show today. A little early season NBA chat with him. Odds and ends wraps it up with the stories maybe not getting as much coverage as they should. Contender Pretender with Sam Yarnell is coming up in a few minutes. We'll get into the Monday night football game, which Sam actually went to. I feel bad that he had to attend it. There is big news coming from the Buffalo Bills on the heels of a loss last night at home to the Denver Broncos. The late pass interference call that you saw there setting up a field goal attempt, which would go astray. And unfortunately for the Bills, they had too many men on the field. Sean McDermott, probably not very happy. Will Lutz missing wide right. I actually heard somebody in the bowling alley go, "Oh my God, he missed it." And I looked up and he missed it. And I said, "Yeah, but there's flags down." And judging where the flags were, I was like, this is definitely going against Buffalo. And it did. Lutz got another shot from 41 yards, and this time he had no trouble. He puts it through the uprights for an improbable 24-22 win for the Buffalo Bills on the road, or for the Broncos on the road, I should say. And look, all of a sudden, they're 4-5. It's just, I mean, remarkable to think about when you consider where this team was, how bad they were for so much of the early season. Oh, there is Sam Yarnell. Looking dapper as ever in front of some nice fancy schmancy artwork. So probably somewhere near Buffalo. We've kept him away from the sharp objects this morning. And Sam joins us on the program. So, Sam, let's talk about this loss for the Buffalo Bills. And the big news of the day, Ken Dorsey, their offensive coordinator, is out of a job. Tell us your thoughts as a Bills fan, as somebody that's in the belly of the beast that was at this game last night, sort of where this team is right now.
Jason, first of all, it's good to be back.
We missed you.
That I don't have to.
We missed you after. We missed you. We missed you on the day off yesterday.
I'm sure.
Nick Ferguson filled in admirably, though, I have to say. You did almost get Wally pipped.
It would have been understandable had I been Wally pipped. That said, I'm just glad I'm not going to have to live through that again, man. That was painful. I actually tweeted last night about how I left the game early and why. If you want to know why, go over to my Twitter at @Sam_Yarnell or X, as Jason likes to call it, but I'm still not on that wave. Listen, I think Quentin Spain, who is a former offensive lineman for the Bills, and a journeyman offensive lineman. He played in Cincinnati, among other places, but he's played for good teams, and I think he put it best. He tweeted right after Adam Schefter dropped the news that Dorsey had been fired. Quentin Spain just simply quoted the tweet and said, "They fired the wrong guy," because they did. It's a scapegoat move. It's a sacrificial lamb at the end of the day. This is not the problem. The problem is Sean McDermott. Sean McDermott is a good coach. He's a very good coach at what he does, and that's take terrible teams and turn them into decent teams, which is what he did with the Carolina Panthers as the defensive coordinator under Ron Rivera. And it's what he did, same with Joe Brady, as a matter of fact, and it's what he's done here with the Buffalo Bills. There needs to be a complete cleaning house, and it becomes a little more problematic because, as Nate Geary so eloquently put it, if everyone would go back and remember when McDermott was hired, he had the liberty to choose his own GM. They let him pick the GM and he brought in Brandon Bean. So Brandon Bean is forever indebted to Sean McDermott and is never going to fire Sean McDermott. This is going to be a problem that ownership will have to step in and do something about and say to Brandon Bean, either you both go or just he goes, because Sean McDermott has proven himself over the last, I would say, 7 weeks this season, ever since the Commanders game, which I believe was week 3. He's proven himself as a coach who's never going to win the big game. He's never going to lead this team to where they need to be, because every time he says that something needs to change, he changes it and it's the wrong thing. So it's time to clean house in Buffalo. Yeah, and today was the beginning of that.
Well, Dorsey is the sacrificial lamb, but it's the warning shot over the bow to Sean McDermott that if this thing doesn't get turned around, and at 5-5 and the way this team's playing right now, there's little reason to believe it's going to change. But you never know. We thought we thought Denver was dead in the water, and look what they've turned out to be. So, you know, a lot of things could still happen. There's still, you know, basically another half of the season to go, or roughly there about 7 games to go, but you have to think that the next firing that will take place at the end of the season will be that of Sean McDermott, if we're talking about a situation here where Buffalo can't get this turned around. But some culpability has to be on the players. You know, Sean McDermott isn't throwing the interceptions. He isn't having the ball ripped out of his hands after a reception on the sideline. Neither is Ken Dorsey. And McDermott kind of went out of his way to say, you know, after the game, look, this is, you know, players have to be held responsible. And then the next morning you see Ken Dorsey get fired, which kind of tells you somebody up above said, hey, somebody has to be held accountable at this point. Somebody's head has to go on a stake after this sort of loss. But I mean, the reality is they're fourth to last in the league in turnovers. Not a place you want to be. And granted, they are able to create some turnovers, so the plus minus may not be as bad. But ultimately, you got to look at Josh Allen, too. You got to look at the way this offense operates. And frankly, I'm not going to go after the defense last night, because in a couple of really tough situations where the ball was turned over, they only gave up a couple of field goals. The problem here is the offense. And, you know, a lot of times we can look at rosters of mediocre teams or teams that go through ruts and say, well, all right, they're starting to come back down to reality. They're regressing to the mean. There's talent on this team. It is inexplicable for this team to be 5-5. It's inexplicable that this team hasn't scored more than 25 points, I think, now since week 4. So somebody had to be held accountable. They do that with Ken Dorsey. Yes, is it rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic? Probably. But we'll have to see here what happens over the last 7 weeks. And if this wakes up some people, sometimes a shakeup like this can get guys' eyes opened. Hey, if they could do this to him, they could do it to anybody. You know, maybe my job's at stake at the end of the season. Guys that aren't on these guaranteed long-term contracts that start to say, hey, I've got to start producing. I've got to start showing up. We'll find out if that happens here with Buffalo over the last 7 weeks. But I tell you, the flip side of this, with Dorsey being fired and everything going on in Buffalo, the Broncos all of a sudden look like a decent football team. Now, we all laughed at Sean Payton after they gave up 70 and Vance Joseph after they gave up 70. The defense has been really good in the aftermath of that loss against the Dolphins. And offensively, you're seeing Russell Wilson make enough plays, and this team all of a sudden is 4-5. I don't know if they can complete the rally and somehow make a run to the postseason. But for the first time in what feels like a long time, in Denver, it feels like there's some hope for this team.
I'm so glad that you brought up the Bills defense, because that was the only impressive stat to me last night. Was you had a defense that, like we talk about so often, missing their only All-Pro and their defensive play caller for the season, missing their cornerback 1 in Christian Benford last night, Tre'Davious White, cornerback 2, out for the season. Micah Hyde out last night. Significant snaps being played by Taylor Rapp. And the Bills defense allowed 6 points on 4 turnovers. The Denver Broncos defense, which has been electric ever since the Miami game, seemingly to me, especially in the Kansas City game, the Denver Kansas City game. I know Mahomes had the flu, that whole team was sick, yada yada yada, sure. You hold the defending Super Bowl champs to 9 points. It's impressive. I don't care if Mahomes isn't even playing. The Bills are in such a wild situation and circumstance. It's one that we haven't, to my mind, seen before, because as much as we should put onus on the players, this is a pattern with the coaches. James Cook was fumbled on the first snap of the game, sat the whole first half, as Sean McDermott to do. So significant runs being run by 33-year-old Lat Murray, the oldest back in the NFL. That is a Sean McDermott choice. He had the player in James Cook that he knew could make the explosive plays, And he chose to bench him because he messed up one time. It is a coaching decision. Go back two seasons, 13 seconds, right? The 13-second game against the Chiefs, Super Bowl trip on the line. Sean McDermott absolutely blows it from beginning to end. Kicks a touchback into the end zone instead of telling the kicker, Tyler Bass, to squib it right at an offensive lineman who was going to be a blocker. Then plays prevent defense the entire way down the field and lets Travis Kelce catch three balls right in the middle of the field for 15 yards each. They go marching down. It is insanity on behalf of Sean McDermott to continue to do the same thing year in, year out, make these minute changes and say the same thing to the media in every single press conference. Oh, it's accountability. You've got to do your 111th. All these coaching cliches that drive me up a wall. I'm tired of it. He's got to go. As much as we can sit here and say, yeah, Josh Allen should have gone through to his fifth progression on the pick that he was trying to throw to Deontay Hardy when James Cook was wide open in the flat with whatever, 40 seconds to go in the second quarter. You get into the nuts and bolts of the circumstances. You think, okay, you probably didn't want to throw it into the flat. There's 40 seconds left. They have one timeout going up into the half. I'm not completely sold on saying that this is all the players' fault or even that it's the majority of the players' fault. I think this is like 75-25 coaches to players, the problems in Buffalo right now.
Terry and Kim Pegula, you have to think at some point are going to, you know, when you watch the decision to take Woods out and put him on the sideline, I guarantee you, I've seen enough owners. Read enough about a lot of owners. That's the sort of stuff when they see that and they're watching Latavius Murray carry the ball in the first half. That's the kind of thing that has to drive an owner insane. Watching that sort of, well, we're going to cut our nose to spite our face sort of mentality that Sean McDermott takes. We're going to teach a lesson here while going to 5-5 on the season. By the way, to go back to Denver for a second, if we're going to crush Russell Wilson for the season he had last year, well, albeit with Nathaniel Hackett as the head coach, got to talk about the way he's played this year. 18 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. It's going to give your team a chance to win if the defense does its job. Wilson's played pretty good football this year. I mean, if we're talking halfway point of the season, we're talking about a guy that's probably going to be a Pro Bowl quarterback if you're looking at the way he's played through the first half of the season. And again, at 4-5, and we could sit here and talk about the mess that is Buffalo. Buffalo has the same number of losses right now as the Denver Broncos. When you look ahead at the schedule here for Denver, might be an opportunity. We'll have to see what happens here in the second half of the season. All right, as we continue with the show, I want to get into Contender Pretender. One of our favorite things to do on the program on Tuesdays, talk about the teams we think are legitimate contenders for this week to make a run at a division, wild card, Super Bowl. But we could also get into the pretenders. And oh, do we have a huge list to choose from for that? That as we continue on the Sports Wrap. Stay with us. Continuing on this Tuesday edition of the show, Kurt Heelan coming up in 15 minutes, breaks down the NBA. All right, we talked about the good, bad, and ugly that was the Bills losing at home to the Denver Broncos. It's time for one of my favorite things we do on this show every week. It's the week-to-week nature of the NFL. Sometimes you're the bat, sometimes you're the ball. Sometimes you're the fly, sometimes you're the windshield. It's Contender Pretender here on the Sports Wrap. All right, Sam, give me 3 contenders and 3 pretenders.
I think sometimes you're the golf club and sometimes you're the ball, because it's more than baseball, man. You really get compressed some of these weeks, especially if you're me and especially if you're a gambler and you're following my picks. My gosh. Not the last 2 weeks, though. 6-1-1, Prince versus the Page versus the Prince last 2 weeks. So hope you've been tailing. Let's get into it. My contenders. Leading off the list, a team that I've fallen in love with. A team that I talk about every week on this program, My first contender, Jason, is the Minnesota Vikings. I think this team is going to cruise to a playoff spot with the Pastrnak. That guy is absolutely electric. I've completely come around on him. Going into the season, I'm sure you remember, I was lower than low on Josh Dobbs and the Cardinal offense, and Jason was higher than high on them. I'm talking the California medical high on the Arizona Cardinals and Josh Dobbs. In Minnesota, he's twice as electric. That receiving core around him, all those weapons, and a good defense on the other side, Josh Dobbs is actually the real deal, and he'll make a lot of money as a backup quarterback in this league for a long time. This season, he's got the reins to the Vikings, and he's going to lead them to the playoffs. They might even get a playoff win, but the Vikings are playoff contenders right now, and they'll be playoff contenders for the rest of the season for me. My next contender, the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns have proven that not only is that defense, they can hold their own against any team in the league, that offense can get it done too, folks. Deshaun Watson came back and he didn't even have to play a great game to get that offense in the game the entire game, enough that the defense made a stop when it mattered. I'm really starting to come around on the Cleveland Browns. I think that there's a chance, especially after this Thursday night football game, that the Cleveland Browns could contend for the AFC North title. I think the Cleveland Browns could be your division winner in the AFC North this year. They're my second contender. And my last contender, maybe my favorite offense in the NFL. I talk about them every week. It's the Houston Texans. It's gotta be. The Houston Texans are an absolute electric factory. The D'Amico Ryan's defense, Tank Dell, CJ Stroud, the best rookie quarterback in the league. The Houston Texans are going to win the AFC South. I've got my money on it. I've already put my money where my mouth is. The Jacksonville Jaguars are crashing and burning. The Houston Texans are AFC South contenders. All right. Now the fun part.
Come on, lay it on me, baby.
My first pretender, Jason, it's the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're horrible. They're awful. They're crashing and burning. Trevor Lawrence is not that guy. They put up 3 points. Trevor Lawrence has 9 touchdown passes through 10 weeks of the NFL season. My God, that team is fraudulent. The Jacksonville Jaguars might not win another game this season. They're horrible. They're the biggest pretenders in the league. My second pretender is really just a shot at a head coach, nothing more. But the Atlanta Falcons, whatever you thought they were gonna do this year, however good you thought they were gonna be, they're a pretender. What is Arthur Smith doing with this team? This is a guy who looked like a totally different human being in Tennessee, even last year. And now you put Bijan Robinson on that roster, three of the most electric young athletes in the NFL between Bijan, Kyle Pitts, and Drake London. And Arthur Smith isn't using any of them. He's handing the ball to Tyler Algier and Cordarrelle Patterson in meaningful snaps inside the 10. I don't get this. Whatever you thought the Falcons were going to be, they're not that. And Arthur Smith, maybe the worst coach in the league now that we don't have guys like Hoodie out in Vegas. My final pretender, Jason, is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Wow. Now, I don't think the Pittsburgh Steelers are a bad team. I just don't think that they're going to get a playoff win, even if they make the playoffs, because of their quarterback. This is a quarterback pretender. Kenny Pickett is not the guy in Pittsburgh. If they really want to get serious, because they have a great defense, an all-time head coach. Matt Canada, this is something I know people may not agree with, but I think Matt Canada's an okay coordinator. He just has a quarterback running his offense who's incapable of anything. Najee Harris isn't bad. Jaylen Warren is great as a young back. George Pickens is an amazing outside weapon. They just can't use them effectively because Pickett does not present enough of a threat to defenses so they can compensate for these weapons that they have around him. The Pittsburgh Steelers are my final pretender. So my three contenders, again, the Vikings, Browns, and Texans. My three pretenders, the Jags, the Steelers, and the Falcons.
Well said, Sam Yarnell. Well said. And I largely agree with a lot of what you're saying. Pittsburgh, it's kind of hard to take them and put them in the pretender category when they're 6-3. I know it has a bit of a feel like the Vikings last year, where you just kind of feel like they're fool's gold and they're finding ways to win some of these games in the late minutes. Some of that is Kenny Pickett, though. But I get where you're coming from, by and large, with a lot of your picks this week. All right, where do I lie when it comes to contender pretender this week? Well, we got to start with my contenders. And we begin with the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, you might be saying, they didn't even play this week. How could the Kansas City Chiefs be a contender? I know. I don't know how. They're a contender to win the Super Bowl. And the reason I think they're an even stronger contender to win the Super Bowl than they were a week ago is, did you watch the rest of the AFC? They went up as a result of everybody else going down in my mind. Jacksonville, who I love, going backwards. Baltimore, who I love, going backwards. Think if you want about Pittsburgh, going backwards or going forwards. Buffalo, going backwards. Everybody's going back. The Dolphins are going back. Everybody's going backwards, which means as a result, the Chiefs go forward. My first contender. The Houston Texans to win the division. See, I could have gone one of two ways with this. I could have said Jacksonville is a pretender and Houston, or Houston as a contender. I'm opting to go the route of Houston as a contender. I'm not going to do them both. I'll just do Houston as a contender. Houston as a contender is obvious. The schedule is in their favor. I talked about it with Sam last week on the show. He brought it up. We talked about it with Matt Verderam of SI last week. He said the same thing. Listen, and there's still time to get in on Houston, I think. I don't think we've run out of time when it comes to winning divisions. I mean, where are we at in the AFC South? Houston's plus 270. You could still get them at plus money. Why not? Go run with the Texans at plus 270. Unless you were Sam Yarnell, who got them at a much better price. What was that price, Sam?
4.5 to 1, Jason.
4.5 to 1. See? Early buyers.
I gave it out live on the show, you said I was crazy. I got to go find the clip.
Yeah. I believe I would have called you crazy for that at the time. I would have definitely called you crazy for that. So our second contender to win the AFC South, it is the Houston Texans. The Detroit Lions, not to be a playoff team, not to win a division, but dare we say, to win a Super Bowl. I mean, again, look at a lot of the teams that are falling backwards. And yes, I know they beat the Chargers this week, and they needed to do it in the final seconds against a Brandon Staley coach team that loses every game in the final seconds. But the reality is, Detroit won on the road. In a season where a lot of teams have their warts, have had a lot of their hiccups, in spots like this, Dan Campbell's team figured out a way to get a victory on the road. They're 7-2 outside of Philly. And I think we all think they can compete with Philly if you put them on the same field in the postseason. I'll go with Detroit. Give me the Lions as a contender. Whew, I know. Take a deep breath in Detroit to win the Super Bowl. To see them in Vegas. We'll have to wait and see. All right, pretenders, these are easy this week. I hate to say it. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. Let's talk about the Buffalo Bills. We talked about them in the first segment of the show. They just fired their offensive coordinator. They're 5-5 on the season. They're fourth to last in the league in turnovers. They continue to turn it over at a disgusting rate. You've got head coaches sitting running backs because they fumble the football. You're not Tom Coughlin, and this isn't Tiki Barber. Sean McDermott, win something. The Bills are a pretender for all the reasons that we have described over the first 25 minutes of this show. The Jacksonville Jaguars, yes, I did it. Don't worry. I did it. We have to call them a pretender. You cannot put together that kind of performance at home, coming off a bye. You can't do it. Jacksonville, you got to do better than that. I've talked you up all season long. I've talked about the fact that you haven't even played your best football yet. Jacksonville, a pretender to win anything more than a division or a wild card spot. I still think they're probably going to find a way into the playoffs. But at the end of the day, can you really rely on them to be anything more than that? Not really. Last but not least, the Saints. Pretender to do anything other than win a crappy, craptastic division. They're 5-5. They can't keep Derek Carr healthy. They're a mediocre football team at best. I don't care if they're going to win one of the worst divisions in football this year. The Saints are a pretender. Certified. Stamp it. Grade A. Pretender. The Kansas City Chiefs, one of my contenders to win the Super Bowl, even though they didn't even play a game this week. How brilliant are we? The Houston Texans to win the AFC South, a contender. Detroit to win the Super Bowl. My pretenders, the Bills, Jaguars, and Saints for all the reasons we just outlined. And that is contender. Pretender. What do you think, Sam?
We go the same way on a lot of those. I think any of your picks probably would have been on my lists. And any of my picks probably would have been on your list too.
Yeah.
No disagreement for anything from me.
Yeah. I get the Pittsburgh one. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I get where you're coming from with it.
And I get the Bills one.
Oh, wow. I mean, how can you not?
I mean, well, I think there's an argument to be made.
I mean, come on.
We've called them pretenders enough. At what point are they just bad? Like, they're just not good this year.
But that's just it, and that's what puzzles me about this. That's not a bad roster. Forget not a bad roster. It's a good roster. It's a good roster. It's not a 5-5 roster. It's a 7-3 roster.
Okay.
And 7-3, when you watch the games the team has played this year, they should be 7-3 at worst.
Totally. They're two field goals away from being 7-3.
They're a 7-3 football team with a 5-5 record. And you can't fire players. You can only fire coaches by and large when you're talking about the big stars on the team. That's why Dorsey lost his job, and that's why Sean McDermott will likely lose his at the end of the season. That's Contender Pretender. That is Sam Yarnell. He gets to host the show tomorrow. The ghost of Jason might be floating around somewhere. Just saying. Sam, enjoy the rest of your stay in Buffalo. We'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Jason. Or see your ghost tomorrow.
Kurt Heelan of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com will join us next on the show. Don't go anywhere. The Sports Wrap continues on this Tuesday. Continuing on this Tuesday edition of the show, we've done the NFL Monday Night Football. We've done the Ken Dorsey firing. We've done Contender Pretender. Now let's talk some NBA. Bring in my man, Kurt Heelan. Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com is his jam. Hangs out with us here on the show. So I was talking about this, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before. I always say this, but the days kind of all mixed together for me. I was talking about the Warriors' Stephen Curry problem. And when I said that, people were like, what are you talking about, Stephen Curry? Well, the problem is he's the only guy on the team that can score. The problem is he's the only guy on the team that can consistently put up numbers for them. Forget having a second or a third option. They'd just be happy to have a consistent second option. This is, going into last night. I don't know if they played last night. They were a 6-5 team. Where is that secondary offense going to come from if we're talking about this Warriors team and them being a real contender?
Yeah, the stat that I love on that is no Warrior outside of Steph Curry has scored more than 20 points in a game this season. Like, none. They thought it was going to come from Andrew Wiggins, and he's at 10 points a game, shooting 15% from three. He has not been that guy. Chris Paul's a facilitator at this point. Klay Thompson is better. He has taken a step forward, but he just doesn't have, like, he's just not going to be the same guy anymore. He is not the Klay Thompson who, and that's kind of why the contract issues have been there. Like, you're not going to max him out. Like, you're not going to, where do you go with Klay Thompson? Because he's a good player still. He is a solid quality NBA player who can get you shoot some buckets, but he can't begin to defend. I mean, remember, he was an all NBA defender. He's not that guy anymore. They're just all around lacking that guy. And it's going to be interesting to see if Wiggins doesn't snap out of it, they may need to go into the deadline and think, well, where do we go? What do we do? If we're really going to make a run at this year, if we think we can make a run at this year, and the West outside of Denver, who, you know, look, they're a little slowed right now without Jamal Murray, but Denver's Denver. They're the bar. If we think we've got a shot, then we got to take that shot right now. And do you make a trade at the deadline to go get, you know, DeMar DeRozan, whoever it might, you know, whoever that might be who becomes available, who could add that second scoring punch they need?
Is this a situation, you know, I remember talking to this ad nauseum with you last year about the fact that it was time to break up this team. Is this going to be, you know, in when we look back at this a year or two from now, are we going to be talking about a situation where they held on for 1 year too long, 2 years too long, rather than starting to break it up and figure out what the future of this franchise looked like?
Possibly. If it really does fall short, we'll kind of say that. If they pull it together and make a run to the conference finals, then it's different. And I think that that's what they see. They see themselves as a good team that's kind of flawed right now, but a good team, and there's nobody else. It's just Denver, and then who's your second best team in the West? Phoenix has been not great. I mean, honestly, right now, probably best in the West is Minnesota. Minnesota's looked great. But I know how much, Jason, you would like to bet big on them in the playoffs with this lineup. So, like,
if with your money, half, only with your yeah. only with your money.
Yeah, exactly. Both dollars. I by the way, they'd be a sneaky good bet for in-season tournament. Like, I don't know if I don't trust them long-term, but hot team right now, nobody's expecting. Rudy Gobert's playing great. Like, anyway, off topic. I think that we may look back on it this way. We may look back and say they should have just moved on from Klay, which they might do this summer. It was time to break this thing up, but internally they don't really want to. It still sells. It still sells tickets. It still fills the building.
It's what I said. It's exactly what I said at the end of the show the other day. It's still good enough to get people into the seats because you don't want to be the Giants who play next door. And what happened was, as soon as the Giants crashed, all those expensive seats that were sold out every night, all of a sudden they were filled by pigeons and seagulls. And all of a sudden, you're an organization looking around saying, uh-oh, how are we going to fill these expensive seats every night in this expensive arena in this expensive city? And the Giants couldn't do it anymore. They finally pushed the panic button, started to make some moves, got better again. That's exactly what Joe Lacob has to be fearful of, is if this thing goes south and goes south fast, I got news for you. All those fair weather Warrior fans aren't showing up.
No, and that's why they are a sneaky option if a superstar does become available. There was distinct interest in Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's obviously off the table since he signed the extension for a few years. If somebody else, and not Karl Anthony Towns, who I think will be moved by next summer, but or by the end of next, but by next the end of next July, Karl Anthony Towns will be somewhere else. But I don't know where, because I'm not sure the $50 million for Karl Anthony Towns is a lot of money for a guy who brings value, but it's not really what the Warriors need. But if somebody else, you know, Siakam, OG Anunoby, I think that they're going to have to do something to get more talent next to Curry, because the core that they've got, as much as they may have winning in their DNA and whatever other coaching cliches you want to show up out there, they're old. They're not good enough. Curry is still good enough, and it's his age 36 season. Like, with all due respect to LeBron, there's just not a lot more of this left, right? Like, the window is going to close. And if they think it's open this year, they have to just try to get through it.
And I said this on the show the other day. You know, the difference between him and LeBron being in the latter years of their career is LeBron could still do it from a physically imposing standpoint. He could do it with physicality. Curry never has been and never will be that guy. He's a perimeter shooter, makes his own shots, you know, that sort of thing. LeBron can still drive to the basket and the waters part and everybody gets out of the way in his 22nd season in the league. That's never going to be the case for Curry. So the descent might be a little more rapid with Curry, especially if he doesn't have the help and he obviously needs it. Talking with Kurt Heelan of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com here on the Sports Wrap. Talk about teams that made changes either in the offseason or here early in the season and where they are. Bucks are 6-4. We're still sort of waiting for them to. Yeah, I saw your eyes there. What's your early impressions 10 games in? I think it's still too early to panic on this team.
Oh, it's definitely too early to panic, but there are red flags. And the two big ones are Chris Middleton's not playing a lot. Maybe he comes around, maybe he gets healthy and plays, but they need him because they gave up depth. They can't have him be anything less than an elite three, third option. And number two, their defense is bad.
Low from three, like 34% in the coming league to
this is a team who's identity when they won the title and for those championship years under Budenholzer was about defense. Budenholzer built a defense. They bring in Adrian Griffin who shifted to a more aggressive system that just doesn't really fit the roster and he's got the dial back. They're playing a lot more drop now.
Yeah, that's what he's out there doing, continue to be aggressive like this, especially with this lineup. I think he fits an even
takeaway
follow there, battling down
low. By the way,
what's
the best defense that you're doing right now? If you look at Boston, who has one of those elite defenses, they just don't get up shots to win. I think what the Bucks need to get back to is stop trying to create turnovers and get easy buckets in transition. You know, especially, if you give up to Holiday, I am concerned about the direction they're heading. Their advanced stats are not good, but they are as
in the first four games they were.
And like, they're not bad. They still have to be honest. They still have a lot of time to figure this out. But I'm genuinely concerned that they're the third best team at best right now in the East with the way Philadelphia is playing and the way Boston's playing. Like, if they're third, that's a lot of money you got tied up in two guys to be. Second tier.
Amazing to see the addition by subtraction in Philadelphia and the way that team is playing. You mentioned the Celtics, beat up on my Knicks last night, Porzingis and sort of what that team has been at 8-2 in the early going. Everything you thought they would be?
Yeah, they've been great. Jason Tatum is probably playing the best basketball of his career. He looks MVP caliber early on, but you mentioned it. Porzingis gave them a little more rim protection consistently. He's been healthier than Robert Williams, who's now out for the season up in Portland. It's just all meshed together for them pretty well. And there's still steps like Jaylen Brown really hasn't found his rhythm yet. You can see stuff that they're still trying to bring together perfectly, but I still think they look like the team to beat in the East right now with all due respect to Philadelphia, who I love Tyrese Maxey. I love Joel Embiid, but I think they need one more shot creator if they're really going to threaten in the playoffs. And that might, all that stuff that they got in the James Harden trade back might be enough to get, again, a DeMar DeRozan or that and some stuff gets you OG Anunoby or that one last piece they need. But I think they still need one more for the second round of the playoffs and beyond, the very highest top eight teams. I think they need one more guy.
Kurt, Phoenix is 4-6. We know they added Bradley Beal in the offseason. Yeah. You sort of look at where this team is right now. It feels like every time I turn on one of their games, one of their big three is missing at least. Yeah. So it almost feels like a flashback to the Nets, with Harden, Durant and Kyrie Irving. When it always felt like one or two pieces of that puzzle were missing. Do we have a real sense of what Phoenix is right now?
No. And just for that reason, they have not had all those guys. Beal is trying to get his legs under him. Booker's just like, they just haven't had those three guys together for an extended stretch like they need. And then we can start to see, like you said, is the defense good enough? I'm not really sold that it's going to be. Is the depth there? The depth has been – the concerns about depth have really shown up during this injury stretch, right, where they've just – it just drops off a cliff on nights where, Kevin Durant scores 31 and the rest of the team shoots 33% and can't get it done. they've got to get those guys healthy, got to get them back. And then we'll see. I still think there's time for them, but I'm genuinely concerned that their defense and depth might just do them in, you know, in a West where, again, Denver's looked every bit the world champion when healthy.
The Clippers. Let's go trade for James Harden. We're playing pretty well when we trade for him. And now all of a sudden we've lost five in a row with him. You know what the obvious, you know, naysayers are going to say right now is it the adjustment period? I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt here, but it's really hard when it's James Harden and you see one team that he just left where he wasn't even playing that got better when he left. Yep. And the team he goes to is not playing very well and he's on the court. There's just no way to get around it.
There is definitely still an adjustment period when you watch them. There's a lot of, there's four guys playing next to each other. And they're not cutting. They're not help. They're not doing the things you need a championship team or which they fancy themselves as. But even an elite team, there's not guys moving and getting the ball the same way. It's still just a lot of your isolation than my isolation. Harden's kind of both taken a back seat, and he's obviously not in peak game. He's not in game shape yet. He's not there. And I'm not sure he's the same. Quite the same guy. And you can just see it when look, there's key possessions late in games where he gets the ball. Remember, what was it, 3 years ago, 4 years ago? If Harden got the ball any point in the game, you doubled him. It was like instant hard double, get the ball out of his hands. Don't let him. No, teams aren't doubling anymore. They'll put a good, they want a quality defender on him, but they'll take the one-on-one risk with him right now because they don't think it can damage him that much. And that's going to be a problem because everything the Clippers want to do is based on you've got to double Harden, you got to double Kawhi, you got to double PG. One of those, they've got to find a way to start doing that and then moving the ball and making plays. And right now it's just a slog. And it's not pretty to watch, by the way, Jason. It's not even fun to watch them play right now.
No, it isn't. And you hope they put it together because it's better for the league when the Clippers are good and you've got star power there and you want to see teams with star power play well. And God knows,
very disappointed.
And God knows I'm probably going to have to see them stuffed down my throat on national games late at night. And I don't want them to be bad because I want to watch those late night games. Well, not late for us here on the West Coast, but late for all of you around the rest of the country. Hey, Kurt Halen, I always appreciate it, my man. I didn't even get to talk to you about the Nuggets or my admiration for LeBron James, but I'm sure we'll have time to do that as the season progresses. Thank you, my friend.
Anytime, Jason. You take care.
Kurt Halen hanging out with us on the show. All right, stick around. We're coming back. Finish it up with some odds and ends on the Sports Wrap on this Tuesday. We say goodbye today. A quick thought on the start of a new era of big men rivalries, and this is one we hope to see for at least the next decade. It's Chet Holmgren and his Thunder against Victor Wembanyama and his Spurs. Now, say nothing for the fact that these are two teams that are in completely different phases of construction. OKC is basically a skyscraper in its end stages of being built, while the Spurs have just finished watching the concrete settle at the foundation and are figuring out what they want the building to look like. As a 40-something that loves the NBA, I think of Ewing versus Olajuwon, or Shaq versus Tim Duncan when I think of big men matchups. Bigs largely played with their backs to the basket, made some shots, got to the free throw line, grabbed some boards, had a few blocks. Rick Smits, Alonzo Mourning, and so on. Now, obviously, the game has changed over the last 25 to 30 years. Some like it, some don't. Mark me down as one who loves watching this generation of bigs in the NBA, guys that can score inside and out. Is it better or worse than the 90s big men? Just say it's different. But say this as well. The bigs of the 90s that I grew up loving to watch, they played the way they did, not because they were incapable of doing the things a Wemby or Holmgren will do, but because that was what was expected of them and the way they were coached to play. The scoring first mentality of today's NBA requires bigs be able to do many of the things twos and threes around the league have been doing for decades. And again, that's okay. Not better or worse, just a difference in the way the game has changed through the evolution of said game. That's how we wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Sports Wrap. If you're not subscribed to the podcast, go and do it now. We're on all your favorite podcasting platforms. You can get the video version of the show in the same place you get the daily podcast. So podcast and vodcast available each and every day, especially over on Spotify. Thank you to Kurt Heelan of NBCSports.com for checking out the show. Thanks to Sam Yarnell for hanging out as well. I'm Jason Page. We'll see you tomorrow on the Sports Wrap.